welcome to the second hour of A Voice of a People here live on WGH Talk. How you doing? It's close to the afternoon. Still hazy outside, and they still have these alerts out for people that will be out walking and walking their pets to be cautious and also to be wise. Make sure you have something over your face or your mouth. You know, those of you who have problems breathing, you know, like I was saying to my guest today, we go from one extreme to the next, right? So
absolutely.
And this seems to be about mask. We thought that we didn't need a mask anymore, didn't we?
You never know.
We got to go back to normal. But what is normal? We don't know that anymore, right? Right. So like I said, thank you for listening to A Voice of a People. We also stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. When you go to the website, make sure you scroll down to the black bar, white arrow, click on there. Scroll down to Linda Sims, A Voice of a People, or the chat show. Click on that and you will have the experience of your life. There are many talk show programs that I have from the past, like 9 years old, so you can go back and listen. Not by guest, but by date. I wish we could have put the guest names down that we interviewed those days, but it's not like that anyway. Or you can download on a, you know, app. It's called TuneIn. You can download that on any electronic device, iPhones, cell phones, laptops, or computers. And once you do, look for the search bar, type in WWGH. Now, this service is free. Even though they do ask you if you would like to join and there's a fee, scroll down till you find the search bar and type in WWGH. A lot of people say, well, I paid for the service, but you don't have to. This is free. So make sure you type in the search bar, WWGH, and take advantage of the many talk show programs we have to offer you. Okay. Or you can call in during a live broadcast by calling 740-383-9944. If you have any questions or would like to make any comments as far as my guest is concerned or what our subject may be about, let me share with you those who faithfully supported Voice of a People. And that starts with Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC of 1325 North Main Street, Marion, Ohio. Phone there is 740-382-8552. Also, Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson of 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. Phone there is 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. They have an ongoing announcement. Free produce every third Saturday of every month until the month of December. This one takes place July the 15th of 2023. It begins at 12 noon until 2 p.m. Last but not least, we have Cheryl Lee. She is the coordinator of Child's Evangelism Fellowship, known as the Good News Club faith-based program, after-school program in our local elementary schools and county schools, Marion, and North Union County Schools. Now, this is faith-based program. After school, need parents' permission, so grandparents' permission, for your children to attend. Now, this is not going on at this time because we understand that school is out, but they do start up again in October. There will be forms, registration forms, located in your local elementary school office. Or contact Cheryl Lee at 740-262-0939. They also do a lot of fundraising during the summer months for the program. They have to provide like snacks for the children and also whatever supplies they may need to conduct the class. Okay, they have trained teachers, so. And they're not alone, so they're always accompanied by another adult, or maybe even two. So kids are in good hands with the Good News Club. Okay, and thank you for those of you who faithfully listen to A Voice of a People live with Linda Sims. Thank you for your continued support. And if it's your first time, I pray it will not be your last time. I also like to start my show off with a thought for today. And that thought was titled, Forgive and Forget. It's a short one, but it really... I'm not going to do that. Seems like I'm on a new one called Listen In. Only when we find the quietness in our own minds can we begin to hear our inner teacher so that we may receive some intuition. Only when we are ready to recognize the value, the wisdom that we carry at the core of our being will we turn our attention inwards and listen in. But it's been a long time since we truly listened, so a little practice and patience will be needed. Sit down, be quiet, and listen in at some point today, and you might be surprised at what you hear. Then do it again tomorrow. All you need to do is remember that you are the listener and not the noise. Woo! Isn't that powerful? Yes, it is.
It is. Very much so.
Amen. You are the listener, not the noise. I'm turning my attention to my guest today, Fred Malone. We have come really acquainted over the past few months. And Fred is a wealth of information and knowledge of historical things that are going on in the not just Marion, Ohio, but the state.
Well,
the
state. Try to.
Yes. And he is the chairman of Marion County Historical Society. How are you doing this afternoon, Ted?
I'm wonderful. Wonderful. I wanted to finish my story.
Yes.
Kind of got, time got away from us.
It sure did.
I was talking about George Seiberling and Mr. Goodyear. Goodyear had been asked to build some furniture out of rubber for the World's Fair, which took place in Chicago in 1893. And he did that, mm-hmm. and it didn't go over with the public. It was basically done as a demonstration type thing, something to be on display during the World's Fair. But it never sold in general.
Okay.
But when Mr. Seiberling was about completing his house and was starting to fill it with furniture, he contacted Mr. Goodyear and said, "I'd like for you to build me a piece of furniture out of rubber." And so he did that. He built a cabinet out of rubber, and the cabinet is in the house. And
okay.
They point that out on the tour, that you can see this piece of furniture made out of rubber. Of course, it's hard black rubber, but it's beautiful. I can't imagine why it never caught on, you know.
Wow.
But again, if you get an opportunity, look up Stan Hewitt Hall on the internet and take a look at what you're missing. It's really another one of those hidden gems in the state of Ohio. It's only, I think it's like only one of six houses that were built, you know, during the industrial age that are open to the public and still left standing. It's actually about twice the size of the Biltmore. And people always think about the Biltmore house down in,
right, I've heard of
you
that
know,
one,
in,
yes.
in North Carolina. It's actually about twice that size. It's fantastic. So if you get an opportunity, take a look at it, check it out. It's only like an hour and a half, hour and 45-minute drive up to Akron to where it is. It's just on the outskirts of Akron. Take a look at it and spend the day. Beautiful grounds, amazing house. You won't regret it. Well, I wanted to start out this afternoon. We're going to be talking about the presidents again, like we've been doing.
Okay.
I did tell Linda during the break that maybe sometime here in the near future, we'll spend our 2 hours talking about all the things you can go see and do in Ohio that
right.
you won't even have to leave the state, and you'll have a wonderful opportunity to not only learn some history about Ohio, but to see some fabulous things that are in this state.
Wow.
Wanted to start out today with... I like Abraham Lincoln. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't like Abraham
right,
Lincoln, you know?
Right.
And I haven't talked a whole lot about Abraham Lincoln, but a couple things I want to talk about today with him before we go move on to our regular portion of what we've been talking about the last few months. Of course, we know Lincoln spent most of his adult life in Illinois. He had a minor... involvement with politics. He served in the state legislature for a time in Illinois. He ran for Senate in Illinois. In 1858, he was beat by his nemesis, Stephen A. Douglas. Mm-hmm. And after he had been defeated for that senatorial race, he had this to say. A few minutes after the Illinois legislature had elected Stephen Douglas rather than Lincoln as senator in 1858, Lincoln was asked by a friend, "How do you feel?"
Right.
Having lost the election.
Oh, wow.
Lincoln said, "I feel like the little boy who stubbed his toe. I'm too big to cry and too badly hurt to laugh."
Mm.
And I thought that was perfect.
That is perfect.
Now, as a follow-up to that, 2 years later, Lincoln defeated Douglas for the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
When Lincoln came out to the platform erected over the steps of the eastern portico of the Capitol to be sworn in as president, he was carrying the manuscript of his speech, a cane, and his tall silk hat. Of course, we all are familiar with that big hat.
Yes.
The cane he put under the table, but he didn't know what to do with the hat. Senator Stephen A. Douglas quickly stepped forward, took the hat, and returned to his seat. He said to Mrs. Lincoln, who was sitting nearby, "If I can't be president, I can at least hold his hat."
Okay.
I thought that was choice.
They called that a top hat, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah.
So
it
was tall,
actually
yes.
Called it a stovepipe hat.
Right, stovepipe.
Yeah, yeah. Had one more. Lincoln's favorite story about the many circulating around him concerned two Quaker ladies who were discussing Lincoln and Jefferson Davis. Of course, Jefferson Davis, president of the Confederacy during the Civil War. "I think Jefferson will succeed," said the first Quaker. "Why dost thee think that?" asked the second. "Because Jefferson is a praying man," said the first. "And so is Abraham, a praying man," said the second.
Okay.
"Yes," said the first, "but the Lord will think Abraham is just joking."
Why is that?
I thought that was cute.
It is.
And of course, Lincoln is known for his storytelling abilities. Mm-hmm. He had a story for everything almost. Someday we'll spend a lot of time talking about Lincoln because he is one of my favorite presidents, as I think he is with most people.
I think so too.
Yeah. Well, I want to start off this afternoon. We've been talking a lot about presidents, but we don't talk too much about vice presidents.
No, we don't.
They seem to get shoved to the background. And it was always said, in fact, it was said numerous times over the years, and has been said numerous times over the years. And Mark Hanna is really Mark Hanna, who was from Ohio and who was the man behind the man, so to speak, when William McKinley was a politician in Ohio. He kind of is the one that coined the phrase that if you want to get rid of a man, make him vice president.
Right.
Because generally, they never get elected on their own merits. There have been a couple, and some vice presidents have been elevated to president by virtue of death. But very, very few vice presidents who run for president ever get elected for some reason. So today I thought we'd talk a little bit about some of our vice presidents that we either may or may not know of. One vice president was of minority descent. Any idea who he was?
No.
And we're not talking about Kamala Harris.
Yeah, because she's just new.
Right. Charles Curtis. Charles Curtis, a Republican vice president under Herbert Hoover.
Okay.
And, of course, not a lot of people think about Herbert Hoover either because he was president when the stock market crashed in 1929. So okay. That's the only thing people remember about him, although right. He was a very intelligent man. That's another story.
Okay.
Charles Curtis, he was one-half Kaw Indian.
Okay.
Kaw Indian, K-A-W. Curtis was born on Indian land in Kansas and was reared on an Indian reservation. He was a Senate Republican Majority Leader during Calvin Coolidge's time. And, of course, Calvin Coolidge succeeded Warren Harding when he passed away and then went on to be elected in his own regard. He announced that he would run for president in 1932, but accepted the second spot under Herbert Hoover instead.
Right.
So, little-known president, or little-known vice president, Charles Curtis. Who was the first vice president to be called VEEP? V-E-E-P. A lot of times the vice president is referred to as the VEEP.
Okay.
That's B. Alvin Barkley. Now, Alvin Barkley was Truman's vice president. He had been called the Veep. The former Senate Majority Leader, who hailed from Kentucky, was the last vice president to be born in a log cabin.
Okay.
We always talk about who was the last president born in a log cabin. Well, this is the last vice president born in a log cabin. He became one of the Senate's most formidable orators of his time. To a dispirited Democratic convention in 1948, he delivered a rousing keynote address. It was the third time he had been a keynoter at a Democratic convention. Truman then picked this fiery orator as his running mate in 1948. The new vice president was given the name Veep by his 10-year-old grandson in 1949. That same year, the 71-year-old Barkley married a 38-year-old widow.
Okay.
71 and 38. In 1952, he made a brief run for the presidential nomination and later returned to the Senate in 1955. In 1956, while speaking at a Washington and Lee University in Lexington, Virginia, he collapsed and died during his speech, just after quoting the Bible.
Oh, my.
In which he said, "I'd rather be a servant in the house of the Lord than in the seat of the mighty, I'm sorry." Barkley was the oldest man to serve as vice president.
Oh, really?
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yeah. I do remember, I collect political memorabilia, and I do have a Truman Barkley button. Which vice president said, "What this country needs is a good 5-cent cigar"? Have you heard that phrase before?
I don't think so.
That was an extremely popular phrase back in the 20s and 30s.
Okay.
And this was coined by Thomas Marshall. This Indiana vice president under Woodrow Wilson uttered this phrase while presiding in the Senate. A droll Hoosier, he also replied when asked about the significance of the vice presidency. "Once there were two brothers. One ran away to sea. The other was elected vice president. And nothing was ever heard of either of them again."
That is something.
Which vice presidents who never became president by death were elected later to the presidency? You'll never get this. John Adams in 1797 and Thomas Jefferson in 1801, Martin Van Buren in 1840, Richard Nixon in 1968, and George H.W. Bush in 1988. So those were who never became president by death and were later elected to the presidency. Which incumbent vice presidents failed to win the presidential election? And again, there are a few of these. The incumbent vice president under John Breckinridge was defeated in 1860. Vice President Richard Nixon lost in 1960. Of course, that was to Kennedy.
Right.
Vice President Hubert Humphrey lost in 1968 to Richard Nixon. President Walter Mondale lost in 1980. And Vice President Albert Gore was defeated in 2000, of course, to George Bush.
Right, yes, he was.
Yep. Who was the only vice president who also had been Speaker of the House? And this one I did not know before. Schuyler Colfax. Colfax holds the unique distinction of presiding over both houses of Congress in his elective capacity. Congressman Colfax from Indiana had been Speaker of the House for 6 years when he was tapped to be Grant's running mate in 1868. As vice president, he was the subject of reports about his involvement in the Credit Mobilier scandal. That was a company that constructed the Union Pacific Railroad. Colfax was dumped from the ticket in 1872 when Grant ran for re-election. The grandson and namesake of which vice president twice ran for president? And this was in the 50s, well, 40s and 50s. That was Adlai Stevenson. You remember that? Remember
yes,
that
I
name?
Yes, I do.
The grandfather of Illinois Governor Adlai Stevenson, who twice lost to Eisenhower, served as vice president under Grover Cleveland. The son of a slaveholding farmer in Kentucky, Stevenson moved to Bloomington, Indiana, where in his 20s was a supporter of Stephen Douglas. He was elected vice president in 1892 Later in 1900, he ran for vice president with William Jennings Bryan and lost. Okay. William Jennings Bryan ran for president three different times, twice against William McKinley in 1896 and 1900, and again in 1904, he ran for president against Teddy Roosevelt and lost again. So poor William Jennings Bryan lost for president three different times.
Three times. At least he didn't, well, he finally had to give up.
Yeah. He did. He finally gave up. And have you ever heard of the Scopes Monkey Trial?
I don't think so.
That was a trial that was held in, I'm trying to think the state, was one of the southern states. William Jennings Bryan was the prosecutor, and I can't think of the attorney that represented the defendant. The Scopes Monkey Trial was about an eighth grade science teacher who was teaching his class the Darwin's theory of evolution. And at that time, it was against the law in that state, I want to say...
To teach that?
To teach the theory of evolution.
Really?
Yeah, it was against the state law. And so charges were brought against him. And I cannot think of the very famous orator and attorney, and he's from Ohio. Gosh. But anyway, William Jennings Bryan was the attorney for the prosecution. He had been brought in to assist the local prosecutor in this trial. It'll come to me on my way home.
But look how far we've come from
that. Oh, yeah, yeah. And there was a famous movie made about it called Inherit the Wind.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of the movie Inherit the Wind?
Yes, I have.
If you ever get a chance, try to find that movie, Inherit the Wind. Now, again, I can't think... can't think of the two
actors
that portrayed the Plarks. But anyway, it's a very, very good, very, very good movie.
Wind.
Yeah,
yes.
It's a very, very good movie.
I'll look for that.
Yeah,
I
look
love
for it.
Movies anyway.
But anyway, that was after Bryan's three-time losses as a president, a candidate for the presidency, that he served as a prosecuting attorney. In that case, but Inherit the Wind.
What state was that?
I can't remember. It was one of the southern states. Maybe, I don't think it was too far south. Kentucky, maybe? Tennessee? I can't remember now. But anyway, moving on. Which vice president never served? This is really interesting. William King. King was elected vice president as the running mate of Franklin Pierce. Okay. A native of Alabama, King had served in the Senate from Alabama for three decades. At the time of his election in 1852, King was suffering from tuberculosis. Following his election, he went to Cuba to recover. Too ill to return for the inauguration ceremony, he took his vice presidential oath in Havana, Cuba. Later, he returned to his home in Cahaba, Alabama, where he died, never actually assuming his duties as vice president.
Hmm.
What two vice presidents resigned from their office?
That was too bad, though, that he died.
Yes, and he never had an opportunity.
Wow.
Yeah, and tuberculosis, you know, back in the day, killed a lot of people.
Yes.
First of all, they didn't discover it. That you had tuberculosis until it was so far advanced that they couldn't do anything with it, and they had really no cure at that time.
Right, right.
What two vice presidents resigned from their office? John C. Calhoun in 1832 and Spiro T. Agnew. Remember him?
Yes, I do.
In 1973. Calhoun resigned in December of 1832 to protest President Jackson's opposition to Calhoun's nullification policy of states' rights. Agnew was forced to resign in 1973. He had faced charges in a kickback scheme while serving as governor in Maryland. And if I remember correctly, that kickback scheme had to do with the sale of school books to schools in the state. And he was getting a kickback from the supplier of the school books for arranging for contracts with different school districts, and they found out about it, so he was taking money when he shouldn't be.
Okay.
Two vice presidents represented a different political party than the president under whom they served. Now, if you remember, I think I mentioned this a couple of times back, that in the early days, we didn't have a president and a vice president running together. Mm-hmm. Two people ran, and whoever got the most votes turned out to be president, and whoever got the second most votes turned out to be vice president. Now, sometimes there were as many as four or five people running for president.
Right.
So it was always the two top vote getters that got the two offices, Thomas Jefferson and Andrew Johnson. Jefferson lost the presidency to John Adams in 1796, and under the Constitution at that time, he then became vice president. Adams was a Federalist like George Washington, under whom he had served as vice president. Jefferson was head of the new party of anti-Federalists who called themselves Democrat-Republicans, which I think is funny, the forefather of today's Democratic Party. Andrew Johnson was the Democratic governor of Tennessee. President Abraham Lincoln in 1864 replaced Vice President Hannibal Hamlin of Maine with Johnson. Now, he served out the first term, but then he took Johnson when he ran for his second term. Johnson forced his selection on the Republican convention for reasons of state and diplomatic policy. Britain and France were threatening to recognize a Confederacy, so Lincoln told his political lieutenant Alexander McClure in Pennsylvania, "The British and French don't know that the number two position in our government is not all that important. Johnson is from the South, and his selection proved that this is not a sectional fight between a fight about slavery." So he was even concerned then that the South was going to split away. If worked, Britain and France were not sympathetic to the institution of slavery and did not recognize the Confederacy. Although, I have to add a caveat to that, the South did receive a lot of supplies from England during the Civil War.
Right.
That's why the Union government started setting up blockades around major ports, especially New Orleans, where a lot of the goods were coming in. And on the western, on the eastern side of Florida, there were a couple of ports that they would do blockades. Charleston, South Carolina was another place where they set up blockades to stop that. But they didn't, even though they didn't recognize a Confederacy, they still sold them supplies so they could make money off of it.
I'm sure, right?
Well, sure, absolutely, yeah. A city in the 50th state is named after which vice president who served then under Theodore Roosevelt? Now, of course, the 50th state being Alaska.
Right.
Charles Fairbanks. Fairbanks was born in a one-room log cabin in Unionville Center, Ohio.
Okay.
Yeah, he was an Ohio-born guy. In 1852. He developed a successful law practice as a railroad attorney in Indianapolis, Indiana. As a senator, he actively campaigned to be vice president in 1904, running with President Teddy Roosevelt. In 1912, Fairbanks supported President Taft against Roosevelt. That was after Taft had served his term as president and tried to run again in 1912. Then 4 years later, he ran with Charles Evans Hughes in his losing race against President Wilson. The second most populous city in Alaska was named after him when he was vice president in 1905.
Okay.
And there is, of course, still that city, Fairbanks, Alaska, that still exists since today. One of the bigger cities, I think, in Alaska, Fairbanks.
I think so, too. Very popular.
Yes. Which vice president was tried for treason? Now, this was early on. Aaron Burr. Remember the name Aaron Burr?
I think so.
Aaron Burr, I think it's part of my little story here. Aaron Burr in 1800, the New York politician, was elected vice president with Thomas Jefferson. He had run for president, got the second highest number of votes, so he became vice president under Jefferson. He had broken off relations shortly thereafter. He didn't run for vice president then in 1804. Instead, he ran for governor of New York, where he was defeated largely because of Alexander Hamilton. Burr would later kill Hamilton in a duel. Remember, we talked about that earlier.
Yes,
That actually was in the same year. Indicted for murder, Burr fled New York and tried to separate the southwestern states that had been acquired under the Louisiana Purchase to make himself leader of a new nation. Now, there's an island in the Ohio River called Blennerhassett Island. You ever hear of it?
I don't think so.
It's not too far off of... it's between Parkersburg and Marietta on the Ohio River. It was owned by a gentleman by the name of Blennerhassett. Now, Blennerhassett... Thank you. Blennerhassett was a very rich and influential man.
Right.
And he built a beautiful mansion on Blennerhassett Island. And when Burr was originally charged with murder, before he went to Texas to try to form this new nation, he went to Blennerhassett Island and was there for a while. And then he went to Texas to try to form this new nation. He was arrested in 1807 and tried for treason before Chief Justice Marshall. He was acquitted, much to the disappointment of President Thomas Jefferson, who blamed Marshall, who was his cousin and his political enemy. Now, after he was acquitted, he went back to Blennerhassett Island and in the process tried to get Blennerhassett involved in some underhanded dealings.
Mm-hmm.
Blennerhassett lost all of his money, became a pauper, and went back to England, where he had originally come from, and lived out the rest of his life in debtor's prison.
Wow.
And Burr, of course, ended up dying.
Hmm.
So, he was not an all-around good guy at all.
He wasn't,
no.
Was he? Didn't have a good reputation.
No, he didn't. He did not. Let's see what we have left here. Which vice president was a musical composer? And I have to say, I did not know this originally. Charles Dawes. Dawes, as I said before, was vice president under Coolidge. And he was actually a talented musician and a composer. His work, Melody in A Major, gained acclaim in 1911. And he wrote a popular song called It's All in the Game. And I've heard that song. It's been done several times over the years by different artists. He also won the Nobel Prize for Peace for the Dawes Plan to stabilize the German economy. Dawes did not get along with President Coolidge. Hoover, however, would make him ambassador to Great Britain.
We have a call and coming in. Hello, caller, you are on the air. Hello? Hello? Hello, caller, you are on the air.
Yep.
Hello, caller, you are on the air. Can you hear? Back. I don't know why I didn't connect. All right, go ahead.
Okay. Let's see. I forget where I was. Oh, here we go.